doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Pro Basketball Talk Extra. I'm your host, Corey Robinson, with Kurt Heelan. Look, Kurt, I am so excited to talk to you because, one, it's been a while.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff happening, you know, rumors of rumors and rumors of war and et cetera within the basketball world. But the World Cup, I know you've been watching a ton of it. Before we get into it, though, how are you doing? How's your week?
Good. You know, like, you've been the one out doing stuff. I've been so I want to hear about your trip to the Netherlands. I want to hear how that went because Look, life's back to normal around here with teachers and kids in school. Like, we're back kind of on a rhythm. So nothing interesting is happening in my life.
See, I find that hard to believe. I feel like kids make things interesting. I feel like that's what kids do. Yeah, I was in Amsterdam and Utrecht. I basically just got on trains. This is what I like to do. I like to go to a country. And I kind of like, it's kind of random how I pick countries. And then I just go there and I say, okay, this time I wanted to go. I wanted to study artists like Vincent van Gogh. There were some really great shows. We talked about the Cypress show that you saw at the Met. And then there was a great, I love Peter Paul Rubens and stuff. So I wanted to kind of understand the Netherlands and like Flemish art in general. So I went out there and I got on trains and like every day I would just wake up at 6 a.m. when it was still dark, go to the train station and then just go on a 4-hour train ride somewhere random and then walk around for about, you know, 7 or 8 hours, look at stuff. And then come back and then just pass out by 10 p.m. So that's kind of how I travel. If you don't necessarily like it, because we walk like 8+ miles
a day. Yeah,
it's very hardcore. It's like literally like, you know, like I was out in the wilderness, like in Zelda Woods in the Netherlands. I was like in the small town walking on the highway, like going in and out of like national forests and like, you know, eating at roadside, like truck stops for tomato soup. Like it was like a very intense trip, but I learned a great deal about art. So I'm happy to be back. And I got to go to Paris and I got to kind of peek in. You know, I went straight to Notre Dame. I went to at a long way. I literally went straight. I got to the airport from Charles de Gaulle straight to Notre Dame. Looked at, you know, one of my favorite.
When I was there last was not long after the fire. So it was all scaffolding. You couldn't get close to it. How is that coming along?
Yeah, so there's still a little barrier around it. I didn't go too close because there was like all these tents and stuff around. You could still see the scaffolding, but the facade is immaculate. And I mean, it looked really pretty. I can text you a photo after this.
Yeah,
but it looked really pretty, and it was just stunning to see, and I couldn't stop smiling because, you know, it's one of those things where you're walking around Paris, you're walking around the Seine, and you're just like, oh my gosh, you walk by the Louvre,
yeah,
and you just like, there's just something, there's a real magic, and I could kind of feel that pre-Olympic magic. You know, I've been to Tokyo, I was there for the Olympics, I was there in Beijing for the Olympics, but this felt like the city was, it really did feel special, you know, and I've been to Paris before, but this one felt different. There's a different sense, so I can't wait for next year.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, you'll be there, I'm sure, and then that would be great, and it is, look, man, talk about one of the world's great art cities too. Though.
Oh, the fashion there is out of this fashion, world.
Yeah, so.
So let's talk about basketball, shall we? The World Cup. There was a moment there where the U.S., it looked as though with that loss to Lithuania, some soul searching briefly. You know, we know Coach Kerr at the very beginning said, this is how you beat us. It's not really a secret. Yeah. He's like, rebounding size, like these are our weaknesses, right? And we kind of saw Lithuania take advantage of that. And then how did the U.S. respond beating Italy quite handily? What has been your take? I know you've been watching a lot of the World Cup.
Yeah, look, I think that this U.S. team, and I've talked about before, I think they have really better chemistry than some. They've come together pretty quickly, but they needed that loss a little bit for – Kerr called it afterwards, and I think it's the appropriate term, the Popovich term, appropriate fear. Like, I think they'd won nine in a row. They needed to face somebody that played the international game well, which Lithuania does. And by the way, Lithuania doing this without Domantas Sabonis. Like, their best player isn't even there, unless you think they're going to be some sort of Olympic pushover or something down the line. They needed that kind of wake-up call, and you could see it against Italy, but Italy also was the right team for them to play after this, because not only did they play hard from the start, the defensive rotations were sharper. It was the best game, especially the first half, best half they had played. But Italy isn't the team to exploit what they do. They've got Germany next in the semifinals on Friday. That is a team that led them by 16 in the second half when they played before, and Anthony Edwards kind of flipped the switch and turned around. They can't get down by 16 this time. So I think it's going to be really now they're down to the final four. I think the real tests are there for the Americans.
You know, it's interesting because when you look at the U.S. roster, I know for a lot of people who are basketball fans, you might recognize a few names, you know, like Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson. You might recognize, you know, Mikal Bridges, for instance, a rising star in the league. But a lot of people, I don't know if they, you know, are like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to watch Austin Reeves play, you know. So I guess, like, what has been your take on who has shined on this roster for you?
On this roster in particular, I think there's two things I would want to talk about. First off, I think there was a lot of, and look, Austin Reeves is good, but he's a Laker. He's overhyped. No, but by the end of training camp, they're like, no, dude, Austin's legit. And Austin has absolutely been legit. But I think what's really stood out, the two guys that have been dynamic for them is Reeves paired with Tyrese Halliburton off the bench has been phenomenal. I think this has been a great setting for Tyrese Halliburton. And I think, we'll talk about them more later. I'm sneaky high on the Pacers this year as a playoff team. Mm-hmm. I think that they're better than people realize. Wow. But Halliburton's part of that. He is a borderline all-NBA type player, an all-star last year. But you get him with he's one of those guys who's like, you get him in the open court with these players running and cutting, and he's just finding guys, and he's in his element, and he's quietly one of the three or four best passers in the league. And I don't know that everybody realized it until he got there. So he stood out. They've stood out. I think Banchero has been with them. Kerr came around to moving Brandon Ingram to the second unit, which is a better fit, and putting in Josh Hart. But they're still – Corey, I think what's going to be interesting about the game against Germany, they've got to adapt. They're still not fully adapted to playing FIBA basketball, to playing international basketball. And you saw this in Tokyo. Look, the big difference is there is – it's a rules thing. There's no illegal defense. You can't have illegal defense. So you can park a guy in the paint, which is why Nikola Jokic and Vucevic and guys like that are valuable international players, because you can space the floor. Like, you pull the five out of the center, so you can't just park Rudy Gobert in the paint. But because of that, the help comes earlier, and the U.S. wasn't doing that. Like, Austin Reeves got just smoked against Lithuania because they kept – hey, well, you're going to switch the pick. We're going to get you on a 6'10 guy that you can't cover and back you down in the post. And the help didn't come, because in NBA basketball, the help can't come the same way. And they didn't adapt. Mm-hmm. And they better do it against Germany, because Germany's got Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner, and they'll just post up those smaller American wings if they don't adapt to that faster. And if Jaren Jackson Jr. doesn't stay out of foul trouble.
It's interesting what Coach Kerr said, too, about this team with regards to other teams. He said this team, you know, he kind of knew what the roster was going to be. I know you mentioned a couple, maybe Ingram second unit, Hart moving in, but for the most part, you kind of knew first unit, second unit. And I feel like when we're talking about chemistry coming together quickly, you don't always get that with USA basketball.
No.
How has that helped them in this tournament?
I think it's helped them just be smoother. I mean, look, you're going to beat Jordan anyway, but they really didn't have much trouble against a decent Greece team and some other squads that might have in the past given them trouble, just because I think the chemistry are there. And the other part of that is, and we'll talk about this, because if you're talking about the best players in the tournament, I think Anthony Edwards has emerged as part of this. We hadn't talked about him. I don't know how much you've gotten to watch, Corey, but he looks like a guy, not only does Steve Kerr call him the guy on this team, but to me, and maybe you've watched this, doesn't he look like a guy ready for a breakout?
Like, well, I kind of think we've We've seen this a little bit from him, flashes, I would say glimpses of brilliance. I always think of him like a lightning bolt, like, kind of like this electric current that is just so, it's so volatile, but also just so powerful. And if he can channel that, I think that could be a very deadly force. And I thought we could saw it at times with the Timberwolves, where you and I have discussed this, where we're thinking, is this his team, or is this, like, it looks like it's his team, right? But I think that there was a moment here, and I think this is why it's so important to play international basketball. And I think the international players get this. I know a lot of the best players in the world aren't there right now, but I just want to, but you do see generally, like, they'll play for their teams, in the offseason. I think that the international scene allows people like Anthony Edwards, who are like, okay, am I on the cusp of being a franchise player, like the guy for my team in the NBA? What does that mean? What's the responsibilities for me? How do I get into a rhythm early? He is now the guy on this team, and he had to make that decision where there was this one game where he was like, okay, well, I didn't really, I wasn't shooting that well. I didn't know what to do. Second half, he comes in, he's like, four straight baskets. He's like, okay, now I understand I'm the guy. I have to be more aggressive. That kind of shift in mentality is important because now he understands what it takes to be a day in and day out franchise player. And you wouldn't necessarily get that kind of quick reaction and quick stakes in such a fast, compressed time period in the NBA because, the season takes forever.
And by the way, I liked what he did against Italy, where they were overwhelming the team, Italy. And he didn't have to be that guy. He could have gone and gotten a bunch of buckets. He was just more talented. But hey, let's spread the wealth, man. Hey, Mikal Bridges has got the hot hand. Let's get Bridges the ball, even though apparently in the building they kept calling him Michael Bridges. Mikal Bridges had the hot hand, and they were like, all right, let's feed the hot hand, which is a good sign. Not a, hey, it's got to be me. I got to go get my numbers. If the other guy's hot, let's get him the ball. That's a good sign for them. So I'll tell you, watching it, my top guys, Luka's been the best guy in the tournament. Luka, and I know they got eliminated today, but Luka Doncic is just special. He's special in international basketball. Second, a guy who's still alive with Canada, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been probably the MVP. Will probably get MVP of the tournament, or close to it if it's not one of the Americans, because he's been amazing. I'll tell you some other guys though that kind of snuck up with the Bulls. Carlett Jones, kind of a bench guy for them, was absolutely phenomenal. Former NBA guy Tremont Waters playing for Puerto Rico has looked like maybe he should be back in the league. Like, he looked really good. And if you're a Knicks fan, so Dan, producer Dan, this is for you. I'm going to butcher the name. Rokas Jakubaitis, I believe it's pronounced, Lithuanian. Knicks have his draft rights. He's their point guard. He's looked like he's ready to come over and be a backup NBA point guard. Like, Knicks fans have got in the can a guy who could come over and be part of a team and make it work. So producer Dan should be happy because there was a couple of Knicks and former Knicks in Lithuania who suddenly looked pretty good.
Well, I'm very excited to see what happens on Friday when
By the way,
the
I'm excited to see that. And also, you're tying Corey's Jukebox right into Team USA.
Yes. So Corey's Jukebox. This is going to take a little more of a somber note, but I want to do Team USA men's basketball. And once we've been like, in the off season, we get very flexible with Jukebox. We're doing the whole program, Team USA men's basketball. It's Didn't You Know by Erykah Badu. I wanted to invite Erykah Badu into the pod to be able to describe what I think is happening here. We've mentioned this before, the last FIBA World Cup showing with the United States. And then in Tokyo, there was a moment where I was thinking, did they miss a bullet? There were times when I was thinking this. The loss against Nigeria coming early on, and then some of these close games against France. I was like, this is not the dominant US team we've seen in the past. And then this idea of like players wanting to become brands more so than basketball players, which I totally understand. I am more than an athlete, that whole concept. I get it. But then I thought it was very revealing what Kevin Durant said recently on a panel this summer, excuse me. He was like talking to his business partner, Rich Kleiman, right? And he's saying, eventually, he's like had all these brand obligations or whatever, and then he said, "Do I have to do this?" And the guy was like, "No, you don't have to do this." And he was talking to this audience at this panel how he wants to get back to what he loves doing, which is basketball, and how basketball gave him these opportunities to go do these shoots and promotional things and brand stuff. But it's also taking away now from what he loves to do most, which is think about basketball and play basketball. And I think that while the U.S. stars, you know, and he's like one of the most decorated U.S. Yeah. Olympians ever, right? So I think, you know, if he's saying that, then obviously it's trickled down to the rest of the ranks of the U.S. system. And I think that also is pretty clearly indicated in who wants to play and why. Like, you're looking at this roster currently, you know, and you're thinking, well, who's on this team? Who can I really like? It's almost like what happened in 88 with the U.S. team when they sent all the college players.
Yeah.
And then they thought, well, we did this in the past. We can do this all the time. The rest of the world was catching up. And then in 88, the U.S. men's team actually lost, like, fair and square.
Yeah.
And then what was the response to bring the dream team and how to convince all the best players in the world to want to play again, right? Or for the first time. I think that's the moment we're at right now with USA basketball, where the rest of the world, like, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you said,
yeah,
could be in the tournament. He's playing for Canada. Like, you know, Van Fleet doesn't want to, you know, he wants to go play. And same thing with Victor Wembanyama, number one overall draft pick, wants to play in Paris and help the French team win gold and beat USA. It's like, I think everyone, Carlton Towns, playing for Puerto Rico, sorry, the Dominican Republic. So it's kind of like down the list, you know?
Yeah.
Where I'm thinking, like, the best players in the NBA are kind of like Joel Embiid, like, will he play for, there's a recruitment, will he play for USA or Cameroon? Like, you know, so it's kind of like an interesting question right now. Jokic, Doncic, like, you can kind of go down the list. And I think it's getting kind of scary.
Yeah. And how does Erica tie into that? How does the song tie in?
Oh, yeah. So Didn't You Know is talking about this idea of, like, I somewhere along the line, I took a wrong turn. And, you know, so didn't you know what was going to come? So that's kind of the concept. I think it's a premonition of, like, an ill omen, like a forecast that I think, like I said, there are these cycles in fashion that happens all the time, like 20-year cycles, 30-year cycles. And then, like, 50, 60-year cycles is kind of the way it works. And it's because I personally believe, you know, you have kids go off to college and they come back and, like, they start wearing their parents' stuff. And they're like, oh, this is so cool. It's vintage, right? And then you have, like, another cycle later on where, like, 30 years, you know, you're starting, like, to raise kids. And then what you thought was cool growing up starts coming back, which is nostalgia, you know?
Yeah,
because you have to start watching kids show and stuff. So then you start going back to your childhood and you start, that's references. And then 50 years is like when you take care of your grandparents who are dying and stuff, and you start looking at the old family photos and you're like, wow, they were wearing this back then. This is so chic, grandma, grandpa, right? And then that is the reference.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with basketball, I think, where 88, I think, is coming around pretty quick, Kurt. And I think it's going to, I think we might see another U.S. team lose gold. And that's why this premonition thing, I think it's, you know, I think it's, yeah.
Without going way down that road, I think you are totally right about Paris and U.S. not winning gold. Serbia's looked like maybe the best team in this tournament, and they're playing without Jokic. Like,
I mean, it's crazy.
And Canada's loaded. Like, there's a bunch of, yeah. It is not out of the question. Like I said, Lithuania beat us without Sabonis. There's a real chance that they do not take home gold in Paris. Not because we're not talented, but because the rest of the world is.
Which is a good thing, yeah. You know, because the level of basketball is rising, which is great. But it also, I think, it's, you know, it's on us, the U.S. team, to realize that and step. And I think it's on the U.S. superstars to realize, just like with the All-Star game, it's like, well, who actually wants to go to All-Star weekend? Who actually wants to play in this game? It seems like, why don't we just go to Mexico? Or why don't we just, you know, like, why don't we just go on vacation or take some time off or go party? Like, why do I want to be a part of this? The rest of the world is starting to, I think, take advantage of that. And I think that's, Kurt, is what my point is. You know, it seems as though the rest of the world is going to surpass the U.S. unless the U.S. gets its act together. And, like, people really want to start playing and realize it's not going to, you know, it's not going to just, you can't take it for granted. It's not going to just come to you. So in that sense, I think it's great for the game of basketball, but I'm also saddened personally for the U.S. team because I think it's going to, a paradigm shift is coming pretty soon. And you can't just tap Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic like he was turned in 92. Like, you can't just have a new dream team.
No.
We've had, like, three dream teams since then. Like, the Redeem team, the Dream team. It's like every team since then, I guess, is now. But you can't have another super ultra dream team. This isn't like Space Jam. There's no, you can't just, like, call Bugs Bunny. You know, there's no one left to call.
No. And it's, it's not 92 anymore. Guys are not stopping to ask Charles Barkley for their autograph after the game anymore. Like, they all.
Or before the game. No one's going to LeBron and pre-warm warm-ups asking for an autograph.
Yeah, not anymore. The guy gets kind of all know him. So.
So let's talk about Kurt's Corner. So
before we jump into Kurt's Corner, I just for the, everybody listening to the podcast or watching this video on YouTube or wherever, look, I know your fantasy football team, you just picked them first weekend. You're out there thinking, man, who am I going to start at wide receiver? Should I be playing the Atlanta Falcons defense? Like, you've got all those questions and you're probably leaning on Roto World and the NBC Sports fantasy apparatus, which is just brilliant. You got to start thinking about doing it for your basketball team. And we're here to help out a little bit. We're only a month away from the start of camp. So Roto World is giving you an assist with the fantasy basketball draft guide, which, look, it's got everything you need. It's got rankings, players' outlooks, projections, everything you need if you want to, you know, raise the trophy in your group this year or, you know, win money from your friends, which, let's be honest, which is what you really want to do. We're going to help you out. Go to nbcsports.com/hoops where you can get the basketball draft guide now. And if you use, listeners, if you use the code HOOPS23, you get 20% off and you get a $10 Fanatics gift e-card. So do it now. Take advantage of that and jump in. So with that, Corey, let's go over to Kurt's Kurt's Corner. We're moving on to the Central Division. We're kind of breaking down the league as we head into the league each week by doing what we did Northwest last time. We're going to Central. Let's talk about the Central Division. And
where do you want to start? We can go Bucks, Avs, Pacers.
Okay, let's start with the Bucks because they're the clear contenders, right? I mean, they still got Giannis. They spent money this summer to, and he put a scare on them this summer.
Yeah, but say, for how long do they have Giannis? I told you that. Didn't I tell you that there's trouble brewing in Milwaukee?
Yeah, yeah, you did. You have talked about it. I look, for the next 2 years, they brought back, they re-signed Lopez and Middleton. They put in some depth. Like, I think they're contenders this year. They're contenders next year, but the pivot's coming. But do you feel like that puts pressure on them this year, right? Like, they've got to win. They're one of the teams facing real pressure this year to win. They're obviously contenders. But what happens during the inevitable four-game losing streak that hits every team, right? So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think, but from my perspective, when I look at this book, but when I look at this team and I think, okay, well, what are the pressure points? You know, like I like Giannis, right? I think the way he's handled this business in the league has been pretty exemplary, you know, as far as league superstars go. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, for him to come out with that kind of statement with this new ownership, like, this is basically I just need a commitment from you, because, you know, I'm not going to do all this work unless you also put the time and effort in. And I think part of this, and this is what I think a lot of people miss, Kurt, and I would love to hear your thoughts, the stability aspect, right? Like, you just got rid of his coach, right? And also won coach of the year, you know, like, so you're thinking, okay, well, I understand maybe getting rid of PJ Tucker or the pieces around, because it's hard. Like, we talk about this a lot. It's hard to have those little tiny pieces around that, like, catapult you from the next level. So that part I get. But, you know, the instability aspect, I think, is the commitment that could really, you know, convince someone like Giannis to leave. It's like, if we don't do well and, you know, if you fire my coach again, like, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, they got the coach he wanted. I don't think Budenholzer gets fired without his okay. If he championed him, he'd still be there. They get the guy. A.J. Griffin was the guy allegedly he wanted. Puts a lot of pressure on Griffin. Again, with having Holiday back, who's still elite, having Brook Lopez back, but he's 35. Middleton's back, but he's 33. Mm-hmm. The pivot's coming, and I think that's what he's looking at. Like, this contract is up in 2 years. Where is this team in 2 years? How are we transitioning to what's, you know, in 2 years, he's 30. He's still contending. Like, how do you?
Yeah, he's good.
So I think that's what's looking ahead. I think this year, though, that just puts a lot of pressure on them to win this year. There's a lot of other teams, by the way, in this division I like. I'm kind of high on the Cavaliers. Look, good team last year. Obviously, elite backcourt with Donovan Mitchell and everything. But they filled needs. Like, last year, like, man, they need help on the three. They need floor spacing, shooting. Max Strus plays three, plays hard on defense, spaces the floor. And he'll be splitting time there with George Niang, who spaces the floor, does really well, was great for the Sixers. I think the real question for how good – I think they're a playoff team. The question of whether they're a contender, whether they're a threat to Milwaukee or Boston or whatever the 76ers are going to be, that's, you know. I don't want to go down that road. But it's Evan Mobley. Yeah. To me, if Evan Mobley makes the leap, this team is so good. But is he ready for that?
It's an interesting question because, you know, there are moments with this stop and start Cavs team where, you know, obviously, you know, the ownership is patient and they're going to spend. So that's great. You know, and I think Dan Gilbert's made that very, very clear over his tenure owning that team. So awesome. Check. I think the other thing, too, is when I think about Darius Garland, I think he, to me, is someone like the guy from Atlanta Hawks, DeJounte Murray.
Yeah.
To me, Darius Garland is someone who took a big step. I think Mikal Bridges also falls in this category. Someone who takes a big step and then people like start to salivate and gets that all-star nod, right? And then I think that you reach basically a peak, and Laurie Markkanen is also in this category for me. And I don't know how much more Darius can give you, which I think is wise that they got Donovan Mitchell, right?
Right.
And I think Evans, that's the one. Evan Mobley is kind of like, you're right. Who knows how good this guy can be? At times I'm thinking like, is he going to – I'm not going to say that. I don't want to put that out there yet. But he could be really, really good. And if he's great, then this team takes that next step.
Yeah.
Because even with Donovan Mitchell, I have questions because I saw what he did in Utah, right? And I know that he can get you far, but not over the hump. So I think Evan's the piece. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that really takes them over. And does it on both ends, by the way. Like he's a preseason – in the conversation, defensive player of the year type player plus, but the question is the other end. Like he's making leaps. Is he ready to be a little more Anthony Davis in his ability to create and score and stuff? Like, you know, not that he's going to be Anthony Davis yet, but can he be more of that guy?
But then also with Caris LeRoy, I just want to mention too, off the bench, to me, he's kind of like that Jordan Clarkson, you know, that Lou Williams. Like, I think it's a very good role for it, if, you know, depending on how they use him. But to me, I'm like, Caris LeVert off the bench is like, that could be a really nice
thing. That's Indiana Pacers, another team I'm kind of sneaky high on. I told you, look, we talked about him during the World Cup portion of this pod and talk. Like, Tyrese Halliburton's special. Like, Tyrese Halliburton's really good. But they made really – look, they've got Miles Turner. They've got Buddy Hield, one of the best pure shooters in the game. They've got guys, but they made really smart moves. They weren't really good defensively, despite having Miles Turner's back there. Bruce Brown helps. Bruce Brown gives them
– Huge pickup.
Gave him – paid him – big look, this is where he's having that cap space, and now you got to spend it. I'm going to go spend it on a guy who gives us the defense we need on the wing. – And another quiet pickup they made that I love is Obi Toppin, because somebody's got to run with Halliburton. Obi Toppin will run. Plus, if you're playing pick and pop with Miles Turner, Turner's not really a dive guy, right? He wants to pop out. He can shoot the three. Somebody's got to dive, and there goes Obi, or Obi's cutting out of the dunker spot, or, you know, however you're going to use him, whatever sets you want to run him off of. Run up some UCLA stuff and post him up or whatever. You can use him in a lot of different ways to get going. So I liked him. I liked, by the way, their rookie Jairus Walker at Summer League. Comes in with an NBA body ready to go. Like, I just think that they're a team very well coached by Rick Carlisle they're going to be better. I think they're just one of those teams. They're on TV, national TV once, but I think by the end, by January, Corey, you and I are talking about, like, shouldn't we be seeing more of them? Like,
yeah, and it's a nice position to be in, especially when you're kind of like, I think Tyrese Halliburton, I agree with you. Yeah, there's nothing you said about that. I agree with you. I think Obi Toppin, this is just my personal opinion. You know how I think about roster management and such. To me, that's writing on the wall for Miles Turner. I didn't understand I don't understand his history with that organization personally. I think this is like, we're ready to start thinking about potentially, you know, moving. I think that's a really good point. I think that's a really good pickup. And then Bruce Brown, I agree. I think that's great Pacers. I think it's bad for Bruce Brown. And I think you only need to look at something like Jeremy Grant, for instance, as someone who has done like really well, moves on. DeJounte Murray. There's another person. And what's that one guy? The guy who went to Washington, who played so well for Bertans.
Oh, Bertans.
Davi Bertans is another example. Like, so you play super well, you go to another team with these expectations, you sign a bigger deal because you wanted the money. I understand that. It's hard to make this kind of money ever again in your lifetime. But I think it does kind of affects the trajectory of your career, I think, negatively. So I disagree with the move for Bruce personally, but I think the Pacers won here. I mean, he's a great player for them.
It's a great pickup for them. So Also in this division, the Chicago Bulls, no Lonzo Ball for the entire season. We already know that, which I just
that's so sad, by the way.
And this is a major surgery, third surgery, but this one, growing tissue, putting it back in. Nobody's really coming back from that. I hope to see him back on the court next year. He's putting in the work. He's talking back to Stephen A. Smith. Good. But I hope we see him back on the court because he was the glue that made this whole thing go. Does this feel like to you? I mean, look, there's talent on this roster, obviously. We talked about Vucevic, who they resigned. They got LaVine is a scoring machine. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's also the question of, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, I think the Bulls are back where they started before. I mean, let's talk about some of the people who are coming back. Kobe White. I mean, I think when I was in Chicago, I was very briefly, this was during COVID. So it was like right before COVID, I moved to Chicago and I was around the team and there was so much buzz around Kobe White, right? I mean, he was doing pretty amazing stuff back then in 2020. People were like, what could he be for us? And I'm happy that they're rewarding him. I think he's a good player for them. He just got on a 3-year deal. Who else did you like that they're coming back?
They've got talent. I think obviously DeRozan's back, but I think the question just becomes at what point, if you're Bulls management, are you, and I guess this has been the issue with Bulls ownership above that beyond for a while. Are they happy being just okay? Like a good player? Or do you make a move? Is it time to think about how you're going to switch this thing up and be better? So, I mean, they're going to be okay. They're going to be good. They're not going to be a bad team, but at what point do you say we're okay?
This is a great question. I think you're right on, because the reason why they did a cataclysmic seismic shift, I mean, like they destroyed everything to be great, right? And they're just okay again, you know? And then you have to think, what do we need to do? I think I love Vucevic as a player, you know? But I do think there's a limit as far as what he can, where he can bring you. We saw that in Orlando, and we see it again in Chicago. So that's pretty, the verdict is out. Yeah. And I think with Zach LaVine, I think that that's another question of, well, did you reach your peak to what, you know, as far as trade value and like what you can offer us? I think the answer might've been yes, following that Tokyo gold. And I'm thinking, well, now they're in a really rough spot because, you know, what do? With a player who thinks he's a superstar and is going to demand certain contract, but then the team is not getting there. What he was doing, I mean, there was a moment last year, 2 years ago with DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. They were putting up numbers we haven't seen since like Michael and Scottie. I mean, it was crazy, right? But it wasn't sustainable. So I don't know what they're going to do, Kurt.
Yeah. I'm really curious if they're one of those teams we're talking a bunch at the trade deadline, because DeRozan and maybe more are very available. We'll see. Another team that could have a guy available at the deadline, but we'll get to that. The Pistons. I think they're going to be, look, they're rebuilding, but I think they're, Cade Cunningham went to U training, you know, was on the U.S. select team and tore it up at USA camp. And to the point he reportedly got an offer to join the main squad and said he didn't want to do it yet. He didn't feel ready. He was impressing the heck out of everybody at Team USA camp. So if he's back and healthy this year, remember we missed like 19 games at the start of last season. If he's back, their young players, Ivy, not, I almost called him Royal Ivy, wrong Ivy. Jaden Ivy is back, grabbing the wrong, Royal Ivy was coaching at the World Cup, by the way. Or is he coaching?
No, South Sudan, right? Yeah, South Sudan.
They got
their birth. Congratulations to South Sudan. What an incredible story.
Yeah, they got their birth with, and that was Carrick Jones from the Bulls and some other guys he recruited in there. So, Carrick
Jones. But so, Jaden Ivey.
And Jaden.
Jaden Ivey from Purdue.
From Purdue. Sorry. So, they've got Bogdanovich. I'm curious if that, like, are they trying to, if they're pushing for a play-in spot, do they keep him or is he another guy where they, they talked about trading him and then they didn't, but is that a guy I would have to think there's a lot of contending teams that would be like, we'd like to get a hold of him. So
Joe Harris? You know, remember he had the injury and now he's on the team.
I think this team is potentially a little potentially better, but you're still looking at Williams and Cunningham and some of their young guys and the guys that just drafted and like, hey, how good can we be? Like, we've just got to get these guys. We're gonna take some lumps. Let's just keep getting better and better each year and developing. I still think this is a developing year. If they're pushing for a play-in spot, that's a good year. Like that's a step forward, right? Like if they're around 30 wins and they're pushing for a play-in spot, that's a good year for them. And I don't think that's totally out of the question. So.
Okay. I look forward to more of these breakdowns as we get closer to the start of the season. Now we like to end every show with a little bit of a Mad Lib segment that's kind of pitched by our producer, Dan. I'm going to go off script here. We wanted to talk about this idea of apartments. Cause you know, college.
Yeah. Back to
starting in Notre Dame's in week 3, by the way.
Yeah.
NC State, first true
Notre Dame. First real test, by the way, for Notre Dame football, because the first two, nothing against Navy, but like.
Yeah. So I'm very excited. But, you know, now that college has started, you know, thinking about, okay, well, how do you decorate your college dorm or apartment room? I'm curious, though, you know, if you had a blank check to talk about interior design, where would you go? How would you design, not just a dorm room, but, you know, if you're thinking interior design in general, your house, how would you think about it?
It's kind of funny because we sort of had that. You're looking at the redone kitchen behind me.
Ooh.
Yes. When we bought this house, we were looking for specific things, and now we didn't have a blank check. But without going into a long real estate story, we were in a position because of how we got a hold of this house to redo a bunch of stuff, including the kitchen. There's things I want in a house that obviously doesn't exist in a dorm room, but sort of does. We wanted we'll call it a great room or whatever the term is, where the kitchen flows into the, like an open floor concept, I believe is the term.
Where
I want the house to flow right through one room to the other. So the kitchen flows into, the kitchen flows into the, call it the family room. I don't know, whatever you want to call this kind of larger room where we gather with TVs and books and stuff. And that opens straight into the backyard. And so you can kind of have this in and out flow. Like, I like that kind of, I want to be able to walk in and say, hey, see what's going on, but also, I don't know, have the vibe of that openness rather than each room's kind of its own closed off thing. So I prefer that. And you can get that a little bit in a dorm, I guess, but a dorm's, I don't know. I lived in a fraternity house where we had way too many people crammed into way too small a space. I lived in a bunk bed. It was...
That's not that.
By the way, a bunch of guys trying to clean up the kitchen it doesn't go as well as you think.
No, yeah. I remember the reason I bring this up is because when I was in college, there was someone one of my colleagues in student government that introduced me to something called apartment therapy. And I'd never really been interested in interior design, like ever.
Yeah.
Until they told me about this website. And I just started looking at, like interior design, and then I started looking at like finishes and like lighting fixtures, you know. And you start looking at floor plans, and it brought me back to when I was in high school. I took like 3 years of architecture. I wanted to be an architecture major at Notre Dame, but I couldn't because the third year's in Rome. You spend the entire year in Rome, and that didn't work out with football, obviously. And of course, all the architecture classes were at the exact same time as practice, so that also didn't really work out. So kind of deferred dream, but I always been kind of since that moment of the architecture training I had in high school, plus this apartment therapy of interior design mixing, I've just been like enamored with the Met's like a Roman section. Like if you walk into the Met and there's this whole room of just like these beautiful marble floors.
Yeah.
And then like that interior courtyard with the sunroom.
Yeah.
And I was like, this would be sweet. Like to live in Italy. And like to live in like Rome and like to have an interior courtyard with just beautiful like ficus trees or stuff. And then just like a fountain and then like these statues and everything's marble. And like you can kind of walk in and out of like the open outdoor indoor thing. I thought that'd be like great. No AC, just walk in and out and around. It all flows.
It also that fits into Spanish culture as well, where the courtyard either in the middle of the house or the front yard becomes a courtyard that. Into the house, like that's I love that feel where you're just outside a lot more. And
yeah especially where you are. I don't know how it'd work in New York, but in Italy and in Long Beach, in Italy and Long Beach it would really work
out in a certain place. Or I mean that's why I think it works so well in part of Spanish and Mexico as well, like you get that right,
the sunshine. Well Kurt, you know, it's always fun talking Antwerp and Amsterdam and
architecture. Now we're going to go off on architecture, Vince, because I love architecture as well. So now we've got we have a whole nother section to annoy Dan with. So this will be good.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to the next time we talk and the U.S. taking on Germany on Friday, World Cup semis.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.